Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast, a series of interviews with key leaders throughout the industry, all brought to you by the Content and Media team at Newco, a specialist global recruitment and executive search firm.
Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast. Your host today is myself, Tim Meredith, Business Manager of the Content and Media team here at Newco. And we are delighted to be joined today by Liz Rimmers-Mera. Liz has a background in marketing and business development for a wide variety of international brands across retail, FMCG and e-commerce sectors. But for the last 7 years, Liz has been with Sling TV, initially in international marketing, and now as the VP of International Strategy and Business Development. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're very, very happy to have you on. To get us started, we always like to ask people the same thing, which is, how did you first get into the content and media industry?
Sure. Mine was a little bit less purposeful than most. My husband and I were living and working in Dubai. We lived there actually from 2005 to 2016. In around the middle of 2015, we decided it was probably time for us to start moving back to the U.S. We knew that we wanted our son to, who was born in Dubai, to understand what it was like to, you know, be American, grow up in the States, be closer to his grandparents. So I started looking for opportunities back in our home state of Colorado. And the opportunity at Dish came up to be the marketing director for their international business. Their international business is a bit of a misnomer. It's actually all content that's distributed in the U.S. to international audiences. Yeah. So because I'd had a breadth of experience in Dubai, working across markets from, you know, Asia through to Europe, basically covering really the entire Eastern Hemisphere, they liked that experience and understood that I could kind of work across different disparate customer groups. So it was not because I had any background in streaming or media. It was because I actually had more of an understanding of how to reach out to, you know, different niche audiences, understand the consumer behavior, manage people within those, from those different cultures, from those different countries. And that's actually how I landed in streaming.
And sort of building on that, because looking at your past, as we mentioned in the introduction, you know, you've worked across a lot of different sectors, always in sort of business development, marketing, so those sort of client facing and commercial kinds of roles. But what's made you stay sort of in this media space now for 7 years with Sling? What about the space has sort of attracted and kept you there?
Well, I really enjoy two things. I really enjoy trying to figure out how to solve fairly complex problems. And the second one is I really am a bit of a growth junkie. So any places where I can figure out how to build either growing revenue, growing subscribers, that to me is really what motivates me. But on top of that, it's also solving really complex problems. So the industry itself is going through and creating its own set of complex problems. So that's kept me really engaged. And then I think the other thing is that at Dish and at Sling, we have a really, we have an ethos and really a mentality of putting our employees into situations where they have the opportunity to learn and develop something new. So in my time here, I've gone from doing marketing over to doing general business management, content acquisition, now and all within international, and now with a domestic business, I'm doing their business development and strategy too. And that's really come through a progression of saying, okay, what does the organization need? Who do we have on hand who can handle these things? And then the other part of it is, you know, showing a track record for developing and learning new things, which I think I've done. But I think also Dish really rewards people who take on new challenges. So it's been a great fit from that standpoint. And it has, you know, in terms of like what personally motivates me, it's great because the industry is in such chaos. Which means that there's opportunities all over the place, right?
Absolutely. And we'll definitely be coming back to that element of chaos later in the show. I've got a couple of questions, the key part of which is chaos, or as we call it in business, transformation, which is the nice way to say it. And sort of sticking on your past, and again, we can kind of look at either it's Sling or elsewhere in your career. who would you say has been the sort of the biggest influence on your career, be that a mentor, someone outside of business, who sort of, you know, had the most impact for you?
You know, I've been lucky to have a series of different mentors throughout my career. I would say at Sling, the person who has served most as my mentor, you know, was my direct boss and manager for about 2.5 to 3 years out of my 7 years. And that was really the point in which I went from being a marketing person to more doing general management strategy and then content acquisition deals. And he, you know, as a mentor, this person really did two things for me. A, essentially told me I could figure out any of it. Gave me the confidence that he had the confidence in me and gave me the space to do that. To not say, okay, she doesn't have any background in this. Instead, he said, this is the person who understands this business the best. So who better to be doing this? That's an important thing. That's because that doesn't necessarily happen in the corporate environment. A lot of times people are looking for someone who has exactly the right experience. And then B, the other part was, I mean, he kind of left me on my own to do the work, right? So he gave me guidance from a strategic standpoint, but he wasn't breathing down my neck as to how I got there from a detail standpoint. And that's, I think, is really important, because there's not really, if you are going to be motivated enough to pivot, learn something new and do something new, to have someone who's going to give you the freedom then to say, okay, you've shown this motivation, so I'm going to let you do it in the way that you need to do it. That's really important. And that was really highly, highly important to me, to actually making that pivot.
Yeah. And I suppose, you know, giving you the resources to succeed, but also sometimes, you know, the room to fail, the room to sort of try something, using your own sort of, you know, deduction and going, ah, that didn't quite work. Why didn't it work back? You know, because if you're just given the answer every single time, you don't get that. Yeah,
100%. And he was always extremely direct in his feedback. So there was never, I never had a lack of clarity as to whether he thought I was doing a good job or not. It was always like pretty clear.
Yeah, very much. You know, and I know, and we all know. So let's do something else. Sort of. Yeah, they are the best chats. Not always the most fun chat, but no, long term, the most useful ones.
The most constructive ones, for sure. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, bring it to the present and looking to the future. What would you say are the biggest challenges that are facing the TV and streaming space today?
I think that they're sort of manyfold. I think that over the past couple of years, many of the players in the industry have collectively forgotten what their DNA is, in that prior to really the rise of direct-to-consumer platforms, media companies were really focused on making media and content. Distribution companies were very focused on distribution and all the things that go with that, technology, your agreements with partners, that sort of thing. And then platforms were really focused on what the end user was experience was in terms of using their operating systems. Now we're at a state where platforms are making content, distribution companies are making content, content companies are doing distribution, and then some of them are even like dabbling into, you know, licensing platforms. So it's created a very confusing landscape. But the reality is that all of those companies had a starting point with a financial structure that underpinned what their business was. And what their business is not covered by that financial model. So for example, we're a distributor. We have no strength, history, knowledge in making content. That's a completely different cost structure. It's a different environment entirely. I would say, I'd never say never about anything, but I feel pretty clear and pretty clean that we are not in the content business, right? Because we spend all of our money and our effort in improving the end user experience via our technology and our distribution and the way that we are reaching customers. If a media company comes into this space and they say, okay, I've got all these investments that I'm still doing in media in generating original content, but then I'm also going to act as a distributor. So I'm going to be marketing to people directly. I'm going to be investing in technology and getting that sort of pushed through to the end user. They've just basically doubled their load financially from a cost standpoint.
Yeah.
Right. All the while they are pulling the rug out from their distributors. So your distributors are paying you $5 per sub, and now you're making $1 or negative on a platform. So it's caused a lot of, I think that there's been a lot of decisions that have been made out of seeing cord cutting coming online, and there's definitely fear there as it relates to the revenue and ARPU, and I understand all of that, but I think that companies underestimated the costs that are associated with moving from one business model to another. I don't think that they were prepared to do it. I think that's when you see these earnings coming out for companies like, Pluto and Paramount Plus or Disney or you name it, they're all losing money, right?
Yeah.
Because I think they underestimated that the cost model is completely different when you start doing different things.
Yeah.
And then on the platform side, they own the end user. They need to have the relationships with media companies and with distributors, but now they're dabbling as well in how they distribute content and how they package other people's content together. And then also in some respects in creating their own content. So I think that's loading up their business model with something that's not necessarily their business, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
you're making a TV, you've got a whole cost model there already that has to do with manufacturing and selling it at retail, right? But then if you're also then on top of it saying, okay, now we actually have, we're going to be making content, it's really different.
Yeah, and I suppose it's the siren call of vertical integration, but because it works with, say, car manufacturing or appliances or something, when you get into the content world, A, it's potentially a bit more complicated, and B, the end product is bits of art, which are much less easy to predict. The tires sold that well this year, will these new tires sell well? It turns out the tire culture has changed. It doesn't sort of work like that, so you've got an even more unstable and kind of unknowable market to open yourself to that much risk and that many sort of different elements.
Absolutely. And I think the against all of that, the backdrop of all of that is the consumer, right? So the consumer is like overwhelmed with the amount of content being pushed their way. I believe we have not figured out a way to manufacture more hours in the day. So there's a finite amount of time that they can devote to any of it, right? So I think that there's been a lot of moves made that have been sort of ego-driven on the part of companies, as opposed to looking at, okay, does this make sense from a consumer standpoint? And how are we going to get a decent enough investment model on any of this content that we're creating if we're going into a marketplace where there are 200 new titles being released every week under these services? I think I'm hoping we're at peak content.
I hope so. There's too many things to watch.
Yeah. Totally. So I think it's interesting. It's definitely creative destruction. And I don't think that anyone necessarily has all of the right answers. But I think that you will start to see movements that are more players being more collaborative with each other, because it helps the bottom line in the areas where it makes sense, right? Like for a media company, I totally understand why they would want to hang on to exclusivity of their content, because it'll give them some value, right? But at the same time, if they have a product that they're distributing direct to consumer, it's also helpful for them to have other distributors, right? Because that just takes away the cost and all that stuff. So I do think that you will actually start to see more and more of that. I think that there's definitely a recognition in the industry that we're at a fairly fragile point.
Well, so it's probably fair to say we're not going to see a Sling original content anytime soon.
No.
Fair enough. Perfect. And kind of building on that, what are you kind of most excited about in terms of the future of the space? If everything's a little bit in flux, if the model's a little bit fragile, what do you see from yourself and indeed the other players in the market as sort of the most exciting stuff coming down the pipe?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most exciting things that are coming down the pike from my standpoint are really happening on the platform side, in that they are, I think they're a testbed kind of for all of us. Like, I'm very interested to see how they do as it relates to their own original content. That's the first thing. And it'll be visible, right? Because you can start to see whether they are renewing shows, taking down channels, that sort of thing. The other piece of it, I think, that's also really interesting is, you know, any one of these players, platform, direct to consumer, distributor, all we are trying to all do is basically serve an end user that we have first party data for, right? That enhances the value of the user, it enhances the value of everything. And I think the platforms are the most interesting because they essentially are like the kind of the last touch point with the customer. If I know who all my customers are who are accessing, you know, Sling through Samsung. Samsung knows who all their customers are regardless of what they're accessing, right? So it gives them a really unique purview into, at least from the distribution space, into that. And from an advertising standpoint, it gives them a very unique purview. And I'm interested to see actually how that plays out between a distributor like us and a platform, right? Because we have a business model that's predicated on understanding the user and the first party data. They do as well. But what we're starting to see is even with that, which you would normally think, okay, that's going to be a little bit of a walled garden and I want to keep them off of my space. We're starting to do more and more integrations, right? So that if we can't serve the impression, they can, right? And how do we share money across that, right? That's a very, I think that you'll see more and more, at least in my world, more and more collaboration on that front. There's very few players who can afford to say, I'm not going to collaborate with you.
Yeah, and I suppose especially as that platform, something, you know, with somebody like Samsung, the market around the platform itself is calmed down a little bit. You know, there's Android and it's for phones and it's also for set-top boxes and it's also for smart TV. And because there's a little bit more like, right, we got that and we got that. It's not like there's 9 competing new frameworks and we don't really, so you can start to go, right, it's not going to change much
right
in the next 5-10 years, maybe. You know, they're going to get better versions, things are going to change, but you can start to go, right, let's plan for the long term and not worry that, you know, oh, I bet on, you know, that platform and it died and now I'm in trouble.
Right, that's right. There's very, none of them, even if they're extremely large companies that are dominant and, you know, dominant players, there's not really anyone in this space that's so dominant that you can say, oh, I'm going to be really in trouble if I don't do something with them. And vice versa, that they can feel like they can walk away from you.
Exactly. Interesting. Very interesting. And one thing I did pick up from doing a bit of research today, I saw that Sling earlier in the year had launched the free stream service, getting into that FAST model, that free and advertising supported model. How do you sort of look at that, those FAST models and services, and how they sort of either complement or potentially conflict with, you know, paid services? How do you sort of see those two sitting next to each other going forward?
I see it as very complementary. I don't, the one thing that, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at performance of content and what needs specific types of content serve from a customer standpoint. Paid content is paid content for a reason, right? And increasingly, because we don't tie people to subscriptions, we see the behavior as, I must see this now. Or I'm really vested in this series. I can only get it through, you know, 3 different apps or whatever, and I'm going to sign on for it for whatever the month, 4 months it's on, and then cut off. Sports are the same way. I'm going to sign up for the season and then disconnect. What we want to be able to do is supplement their viewing on our platform with other content, right? So we want to get content that's kind of adjacent to what we know to be the high demand paid content. And then give them a reason to keep watching when they're not paying, right? Mm-hmm. That keeps us top of mind for when they want to reconnect from a paid standpoint. We have not seen any kind of cannibalization of our paid business to date. What we've seen is with bringing more and more users onto the service, you know, I wouldn't say that we definitively know exactly what's going on because it is, it's new. We're about 3 or 4 months into it. But what I can say is you can see very quickly that there are users that come in, they stay for like a minute and then they leave. There's definitely a lot of those because they just don't know, right? They don't know how to find
them. Have a look.
Right. What we know is we need to get our discovery probably into a better place so people can find the content they want. Even if it's free, you need to get them at four. We have 400 channels. You need to get them down to where they need to go really quickly. But no, I don't, we've not seen any kind of cannibalization. What we've seen is there's still seems to be the same seasonal patterns, even with only 4 months worth of data in terms of conversion, right? They're going to convert when they're ready to pay for something. For us, really the challenge now is to make sure that the people who are coming in and watching the free content are having the right experience, that they're watching more from an hour standpoint, because that gives us more of an opportunity to serve ads to them and make money. but I have not seen it having the kind of effect on conversion to paid that we would have worried about. So I do think that there's a, people don't convert because they're all of a sudden like, oh, I'm having a great experience on this app and I'm finding content to watch and I should just start paying. Like, it's just like, I can't.
The goodness of my heart.
Right. So I don't, so it does make sense, right? Like, and as long as our content providers are not putting their most valuable content online for free, then we're good. And they can't because they have agreements with their distributors, right?
And I suppose it ends up being the relationship that sort of in the very classic old linear TV model, the relationship between primetime and, you know, syndicated television, because I'm watching Friends at 3 p.m. doesn't mean all of a sudden I'm not interested in what's on at the 7 p.m. slot on a Friday. They're kind of different content experiences. So, okay, cool. You get the casual viewing for free, and then that doesn't impact when you want to sit down and watch 9 hours of, you know, premium television. They're just kind of different experiences.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
I know we've ended up getting there a little bit earlier because my last question, but at this point in the show, we like to get into kind of main topic of focus, topic that matters, which in this case is specifically the live streaming TV space and its future. Live TV streaming services like Sling, along with competitors like Hulu Plus and YouTube TV, are still relatively new in comparison to on-demand streaming platforms, and especially compared to, you know, the classic cable and satellite television that often streaming TV and sort of cord cutting is kind of positioned to kind of take on from. So given that you joined in I think kind of the early years, because you joined a year after Sling TV joined, if I remember rightly, then in 2017 that's when Hulu and YouTube launched their live streaming services. So again, you were kind of right there when it was like, okay, let's try this, let's see if it works. So given you were there pretty much since the start of these sorts of models, how have you seen them kind of change and adapt and learn from, hey, let's see if this works, to now we've got, you know, 5, 6, 7 years in existing businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they will be virtually indistinguishable from cable. I mean, I think they started with the notion of, we're serving a different audience, different content, et cetera. And I think that they are, if you look at the price points, they're pretty much at a cable price point. So they're not really that different. Yeah. I think that what we're seeing, and probably what everybody underestimated, is they kind of thought of cord cutting as a behavior of people saying, I don't want to pay a cable bill. But the reality is it's actually not that. It's that people, well, I mean, that's certainly part of it. That's financials, right? But the reality is it's that people are saying, I'm not watching the same kind of content I was watching when I signed up for this cable package 10 years ago, right?
Sure.
I'm doing more of my viewing on demand for live TV. I really need to see local news, weather, sports, some reality shows if they're on an episodic basis. But other than that, pretty much everything could be on demand, right? So you're seeing basically more of the behavior of saying, people saying they're compartmentalizing, and they're saying, I don't want to pay $100 to get all that one place. because I'm paying these two providers for on demand and I'm watching all my content there. And then I want to have some access to this other stuff called live TV, but I don't necessarily need it all the time. I need it like when I need it. So I think that, and I think the thing that we all underestimated was there were far fewer people who wanted to continue to have the same viewing experience, but just in a format where they could turn it on and off. If you look at any of the cord cutting information in the States, the number of people that are reeling off of these, you know, older packages, whether they're satellite or cable, is not translating through into numbers that are coming over into virtual MVPDs. So it's a fundamental fundamental behavior shift. And it's not really solely driven by price. If I look at where we have issues with our own service, it's actually because we don't have a complete set of content for those people. Like those people are still the most likely to come over to a virtual MVPD. But if we are missing, for example, we have a lot of local content in specific markets that we're missing, then we're not even in the consideration set, right?
So I think that's- Oh, you don't have that? Well, then no, under no circumstance, unless you've got X and Y, it's just not gonna work for me and it's working out That's right.
So it's better for the consumer because they have the choice and they have the ability to turn it on and off. But I don't think economically, I think it ends up being the same or maybe even more.
Yeah, and it is an interesting thing of, I'm gonna forget the study that it was, but looking at things like, the rise of the comparison websites for things like home insurance and mobile phones and things like that, and that whole kind of thing of you really have to force, because you know, you tell people, hey, if you move around a bit, you'll save a lot of money, but that's great. And you come back 6 months later and say, did you do it? And they go, no, I was busy. And they're like, well, it would have taken 5 minutes. Like, yeah, but you know, who has time? So it's surprising how like people in theory are like, oh, it'll be cheaper, lovely, but oh, it requires me to do some stuff. No, I simply won't do that. What's the classic one? The compulsory pension scheme things. Like if you make it opt out, everyone has a pension. If you make it opt in, no one's got a pension. It's like, well, you all agree this is a good idea, so why are you not doing it? It's quite tricky to make people do things like that, even when so it's interesting that translates even into these areas.
That's right.
And next question I had was, obviously there's likely to be many more shakeups in the space and viewer habits, the chaos that we were talking about earlier in the near future. But what do you see as sort of the next big shift? In fact, if you do see there being sort of a next big shift in the live streaming TV space?
I mean, I think you'll see further consolidation, definitely. I think you'll see consolidation between direct-to-consumer and SVOD platforms. I think you'll see even some within going from FAST to SVOD. And I do think that you'll see players exit the market because I think I do think that we have a what I would call a glut, honestly, of content. In terms of, you know, if I look forward, I do think that you will see more sort of retrenchment into what people's core competencies are and what companies' core competencies are, right? I don't think you can dabble in creating content. Like if you're going to do it, it's a multi-billion dollar investment and it's like a 10-year plan. It's not we're going to create a couple of series and see how that hunts. You're competing against people who've been doing it for decades, right? So it's sort of, I do think that you'll see a little bit of retrenchment there. I think that the next steps will be more consolidation across the full consumer sort of pipeline, meaning, you know, you have some completely integrated companies like Comcast where they have cable, they have wireless, they have all of that, they have content, they have platforms. I do think you'll see potentially more of that. I think that you will also probably see some more sort of high level strategic partnerships between people who are providing the pipe to the customer and the people who are filling the pipe, right, with other content or whatever. I think that we will continue to see this, because a lot of the shifts in the industry to date have been, you know, they've been driven by trying to maintain revenue in the face of changing consumer behavior. Anything that arcs against consumer behavior, has to arc towards it being easier for the consumer.
Yeah.
So when companies separate those offerings and they separate and they create differentiation and they go directly and they say, hey, you should come to us, you're just confusing. I mean, it's too much at some point. So yeah, I would imagine the next 3 years are going to be as volatile, as interesting, as dynamic as the past 3 years have been in that regard.
And I totally agree. There's nothing quite like having to go onto Google and being like, right, in my country, where on which of the 9 platforms am I aware of, can I watch series 2 of this specific thing? And the answer is half of the series is on one and the rest is on another. And you're like, great, I'm not going to watch it now. I'm going to read a book because I'm just cross now.
Well, like, and also you would understand this, if you're a soccer fan or a football fan, trying to actually piece together a holistic football offering in the US is like a nightmare. It's 5 different platforms. It's actually American football is the same. I mean, we put a huge amount of burden on the consumer and frankly, like, they should be angry.
And I mean, hey, it's no coincidence that around about the time that happens, you see a spike in piracy because people who wouldn't normally do that are like, look, I'm paying for 9 things. I don't even feel a moral compunction about it because I'm giving like 8 people money and I still haven't got the one thing I want. So sodgy, I'm going to go do that. So yes, it does come around to bite you if you're not careful.
That's right.
And then final question on this area, although we slightly got into it as well, in the kind of like purely on-demand streaming space, people like Disney and Netflix, over the past couple of years, kind of hit a bit of rocky ground in terms of sustaining subscriber growth, profit margin shrinking. I think there's been a recent story about, you know, lots of things being taken off because the write-down on just getting rid of content was more valuable than it's worth selling it to consumers, which is a very strange place to be in. And I think not particularly sustainable because you'll have TV creators and movie creators being like, no, because I want my thing to be there in a year and I don't like the fact that you did that because it's my art, so please stop doing that. So do you see sort of similar challenges down the line for the live streaming TV space, and sort of is there thoughts about how kind of not to get into quite the same, you know, lockup that this big streaming giants have got themselves into?
Well, I mean, I think that now that the sort of incumbent media companies have all had some level of experience in going direct to consumer, and they understand the financial prospect of what that means, right? Mm-hmm. Going from a place where you're free of any kind of distribution costs, and you have a net, you know, whatever, let's call it $5 per subscriber that you're getting from any of your distributors, to a negative $5 per consumer. I think that of course they're going to continue to try to get as much money as they possibly can from all corners. I do think that you will see a little bit more conservatism as it relates to what content they are keeping on live TV, because that's kind of, if you look at any of those companies, if you look at their financial earnings, whether it's Paramount, even with a huge free service, Disney, their money is coming from live TV, like, because they are getting paid net of cost.
Yeah.
So like they can't, if they are being financially rational.
Not always a guarantee, but yes.
Not always a guarantee. Then they will look to preserve that as long as possible. But which means you have to actually satisfy the middleman or the distributor by not rocking the boat by pulling too much content off for your own platform.
Yeah. Perfect. Wonderful. Well, thank you for indulging sort of my deep dive into all of the foibles of the streaming space and how you specifically would fix them. So thank you for humoring me on that.
Yeah. If I were in charge, it would be amazing.
And that's the fix. Liz is in charge. So we'll take a turn now to sort of more personal questions. We like to kind of get to know individuals like yourself a little bit better. We like to ask about your perfect weekend. So sort of logistics and costs notwithstanding, you know, given your choice, what would you spend your weekend doing?
I love having the opportunity to spend time with my family. I travel a lot for work. As a family, we travel a lot when we're on vacations. If I'm home on the weekend, I like to keep a really low profile. Like,
yeah.
I want to be able to spend time with my kid, my husband, do maybe a little bit of gardening. I'm a big, you know, I exercise every day and I'd like to get outside and either go for hikes or walks or whatever. It's really, for me, it's really kind of regenerating for the week, honestly, is what my weekends look like. The ideal weekend for me would be like sleep, a lot of sleep. Yeah. Like,
are you one of these people who are very strict on it is Saturday, the laptop is over here, the phone is on do not disturb, unless literally something's on fire, leave me alone? Or do you find yourself sort of having to hover between things?
I don't have the luxury of doing that at this juncture. I'm very good at compartmentalizing, and I'm good at keeping the phone away out of the bedroom. Like, it's not anywhere near the dining room table. That to me, it's, you have to be really, really cognizant of what you're carving out. And for me, it's family time and it's my personal time. The reality of where I am from a work juncture standpoint is I don't have enough time during the week to get my work done. You know, I just have too many things in taking on a new role in January, you kind of have to know what your timing is in terms of when you need to do certain things. And for me right now, if I try to not do it on the weekends, my weeks are miserable. So it actually puts me in a better place if I carve out 2 to 3 hours every day on the weekend to just get through work that I can't get through during the week, and to plan, right? If you're managing people, you need to plan ahead because you need to tell them what you need by when, et cetera.
Yeah, no. And if you're doing that, just making sure it's like, okay, if I'm going to do that, then I know this is when it's happening. And the rest of the time, that's my time. Because you're absolutely right. You are in that kind of job where there's pretty much no point where you're going to go, oh, fantastic, I've sorted it for the moment. Like, there's just no, as soon as you finish something, congratulations, there's more. And in fact, the thing that you did changed that thing, so now it's more complicated. There's no,
that's right.
You've got to be super careful not to let it just take over your entire life, because, you know, that'll be great for 6 months and then you'll burn out and have to go off for 3 months, and that's not
right. And I've had periods of time where I'm working to kind of to this level. I know that they're not permanent. Right. I know that what I'm doing right now will be for the next, they're sprints. That's exactly what it is. But I also know that if I don't keep on top of my work, it makes me anxious.
Yeah.
So it actually helps me from a mental health standpoint to to carve out time and say, I'm going to put this time against doing these things and then cut it off and then I'm done. Right. Like, it helps me it helps me preserve time.
Yeah. Perfect. And we're coming to the end now, so just sort of one final question, and we always end our podcast by asking the same question to everyone, which is, what one piece of advice would you give to someone trying to enter the industry today?
If you're trying to enter this industry,
it's a big one, it's a big question.
I would say the question is, how adventurous are you? And if someone is coming in with a set notion of what they want to do, that's not the right way to enter, because the industry is changing so quickly. So if you're coming at it more from a generalist standpoint of like, hey, I'd like to learn this kind of technology, or I'd like to understand how this works from a consumer standpoint, that's the right way to approach it. Because it's fairly abstract. And I think those kind of learnings you can take to any industry, right?
Yeah.
They're going to serve you in that regard. But if you're coming into it thinking like, I'm going to make $1 million on a really linear career trajectory, this is not the industry to come into.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. There's, you know, some of the leaders in the industry are still sitting down tables and going, right, how does this work? What are we doing? How does this, is this going to be the same in 6 months? The answer might be no. So yeah, if you think you're going to do that, then you're probably in for a nasty surprise.
That definitely.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for giving up your time to talk to us today. Lovely to have you on the podcast, Liz, and we'll hope to speak to you again very soon.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Good to see you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps these stories to be found and enjoyed by more people. For more information about NewCo, we can be found at www.newco-group.com. That's NEUCO-group.com. www.keyleaders.com.